How can you tell when they're right or wrong? He chuckled. That's easy. Usually if the party they're blaming is weaker than them, then they're making it all up. If the party they're blaming is stronger, well, that's when you really gotta pay attention to why they're complaining.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of the trendiest, most popular books on the internet and letting you know whether or not it's worth the time in your busy schedule to give them a read. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. And today we are reading a new standalone book from breakout author Matt Dinneman, who wrote Dungeon Crawler Carl, which has become a total phenomenon. This book is called Operation Bounce House. So it's new, not associated with the Dungeon Crawler Carl universe. But there are some similar themes. This one follows a group of humans and their nanny robot who have been targeted by Earth's government. Essentially, they live on a different planet and they're being targeted because they are early independent settlers of this new planet, and essentially Earth wants to reclaim it. And they do this by sending in video game players. So these video game players get to play from Earth and they get these sort of like video game style mech suits. And then they pay a bunch of money to, like, quote unquote, fight in a real war. And they're told that these people on this planet are terrorists and they're going to help kill terrorists, but they're really just killing these regular farmers and these regular people. So the book is kind of about this group's fight back against this in an attempt to survive unimaginable odds while essentially being exterminated in a genocide. So, yeah. Oh my God, I didn't find a review.
Oh no.
Oh no, rookie.
I know. How could I?
Okay, well, the first thing we do is reviews. So, while Casey finds one, Catherine and I will go.
Okay. Well, I have a 2-star review because the 1-star reviews were long monologues. And mostly it was people who either loved Dungeon Crawler Carl and hated this book or hated both books, which at that point, why did you read it? And then the other part of it was people who claimed that this book was written by AI, which is...
Would be ironic.
Anyway,
would be so deep.
That would be meta deep. So many fourth wall breaks. So the 2-star review, it says, frowny sticker. Perhaps my expectations were too high for this book as I love Dungeon Crawler Carl so much. I found this disappointing.
Well, I have 2. And I picked higher reviews. So one is a 4.5 star. It says, I recommended this book before I was finished reading. Another banger. Read for club, writing this review on the way there. Low key nightmare fuel, but can't wait to read again. And then I have a 3.25 that says, felt like a very light re-theme of Dungeon Crawler Carl for the most part. And right when I was about to give up, Act 3 redeemed it. For me, Dinneman is at his best with characters, motivation, and relationships, and at his least engaging with the in-the-weeds war game rules and scenes. Way too much of the latter in the first section and rescued by a bit of the former in the final third, along with some interesting plot points and choices. I thought those were both fair critiques.
Agreed. Yeah.
Okay. sorry, this one that I'm seeing just made me laugh. It's a 2-star review and it just says, damn, that ending was ass. Anyway, I found one other funny 1-star review in my scroll and it just says, I don't know how it's possible, but I know less about this book now than when I started reading it.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Okay. Well, overall, decently reviewed, not as high as Dungeon Crawler Carl, But the overall Goodreads rating is 3.9 out of 5. The Fable rating is 3.5 out of 5. And the Storygraph rating is 3.98 out of 5. What did you guys think?
I should probably go last.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I already know everyone.
I think I'm the lowest.
Yes, you are.
I gave the book 3 stars. I didn't enjoy it. I felt like it was a huge, complicated info dump. The only character in the entire book who matters is the robot. And I absolutely hated the character arc. I thought it was almost like a cop out. Like, we read the whole book for the whole point of the book to be something that was happening off screen. And so, yeah, I just thought it was really boring. I really struggled to get through it. And a lot of the things that started happening at the end felt just really convenient to me. Like, I'm just going to throw technology words at you and hope you believe that this could happen. When what I thought was really interesting was more about the sociological stuff, about the video game and the Earth versus colonizers, and it ended up being about something else. And I just really was disappointed.
Yeah, that's so fair. And a lot of my critique as well is that I felt the ending was a little too easy. Like, it felt like a cop out a bit for such dire straits, especially like the situation that the characters are put in. And it has, we'll get into it in the spoiler section. So I gave it 4 stars because it's a weak 4 stars, but I appreciate the uniqueness of it. And like, I know it's very similar to what Dungeon Crawler Carl is, but like, it's the same author. So I give a little bit of grace in that sense. And it's a completely new world, a completely new system. And it's a very creative way to showcase xenophobia. It's a very creative way to showcase like capitalism at its worst points. And the idea of like commodifying violence and commodifying just like pretty much everything in our society, and the idea of how video games could directly impact like actual violence in real life. Cause like, we hear all these studies about how violent video games don't really actually like perpetuate like violence in real life, but this is taking that prompt and saying,
believe it.
It could.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very interesting. So I gave it grace in the sense of like the story itself, but I agree with you, Casey, like the ending felt very convenient and I felt like the characters could have been more interesting than what they were. Like Oliver is just, I wasn't that interested in him. I was more interested in Roger and I was more interested in Lulu, honestly, but that could be my own bias as a woman wanting to hear more about the sex worker sister.
Points for respectful representation of sex workers, but
somehow I knew you guys would love Farm Girl Gigi.
Yeah.
Farm Girl Gigi is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. She is. I gave the book 5 stars. It was one of those where I'm like, is it perfect? No, but I don't care because I was so excited about all the themes in the book that my mind, while I listened to it, my mind while I was listening to it was just like spinning. I was like, I need to talk to so many people about this book, about the AI themes, the different sociological themes, like the xenophobia and what we allow our kids to do with our money. And also just like,
yeah,
how he portrays Earth in the future and like what money systems and languages it uses. It's like actually probably pretty practical thinking. America is not the one, by the way. No. So just like talking like all of those things, I was like, oh, I just need to talk about it. And it got me excited. And while there were slow parts and while a portion of the ending was sort of convenient, I don't even care. Like a fantasy book that has a good dark shadow daddy, I don't even care. 5 stars.
Wow, the shadow daddy is a plucky robot named Roger. Yep. Who zings people for cussing. I was like, this is honestly my worst nightmare.
That would be my worst nightmare.
It was. Yep. I just also like, who would come up with this idea? Like, it's so unique.
It's so unique.
And I mean, at like, first it feels similar to Dungeon Crawler Carl. Yeah. It quickly becomes like apparent it's not the same.
Well, I think it's okay. I would actually defend Matt Dinneman in that instance, because I think it's okay to keep writing on themes you find interesting. Like, this book is very different plot and character wise. Yeah. So like, the books have nothing to do with each other other than they have similar ideas at their core, which I think is fine. Like, that's how, why authors write, is they're exploring themes, as long as they don't.
It's not plagiarism if it's your own shit.
And also, well, it's not so different.
Yeah. It's a totally different world and totally different characters. I saw some critiques that like Oliver is Carl, but like that's not true.
No,
yeah, not Oliver is far less exciting than Carl. In any way. Yeah. Oliver could never be as interesting as Carl.
Oliver,
but at the same time, he's like the exact character you needed for this book.
Yes.
I guess.
Casey's like, meh.
I would have actually just like eliminated 99% of the cast in this book. It's one of the huge problems I have with it.
I can see that.
Anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Is the book more plot or character driven?
Plot. It's an alien annihilation.
Yeah. They're fighting for their lives. They're not really focused on much else other than that.
There's a lot of character development because you're forced into apocalypse mode.
Right. They realize they're actually sort of like okay with revenge, but that's
yeah.
Most of the book is about them just fighting battles. So already kind of touched on this question. Have you or would you read other books by the author? Did this book change y'all's opinion on that at all? Since we're all big fans of Dungeon Crawler Carl.
I'm on Dungeon Crawler Carl 7. Book 8 came out yesterday. I will be reading it also. I have not been obsessed with a series this way in I don't even know how long, the way I am with Dungeon Crawler Carl. Not just because it's like funny, but also because the themes are so deep when you really think about it. Like,
yeah,
this man somehow turns this like slapstick comedy race to the end of the world into like some of the deepest stuff I've read in a long time.
Yeah.
I also think I'm probably more of a sci-fi girly than you two. Mm-hmm. So I eat it up. And that's why I probably like this book more too. Like, I don't care. It was awesome. So yes, I will continue reading Matt Dinneman.
It's crazy how like Matt Dinneman and his writing is just so, it's basic and it's in the best way. Like
it's so millennial.
Yeah, it's millennial coded. It's so raunchy. There are so many dick jokes, so many bodily fluid jokes, like it bestiality, like everything you can think of that is not funny, but is hilariously funny. Very Book of Mormon-esque.
It's stuff I would never laugh at if a man said it to me in real life.
Yes.
But in the book, for some reason, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious the way it's delivered, but he's delivering it on top of a platter of very interesting deep dives into society and the sociology behind human experience.
He's not an incel. He has deep thought processes about so many things that go on in our current, in our modern like culture.
Yes.
I really like Dungeon Crawler Carl. I really did not enjoy this book, but I think it did not change my admiration for Matt Dinneman at all, because I still find the ideas in this book very fascinating. I ultimately didn't think it was like really a great story, but because I think he's still creating really creative ideas on themes that I think are really interesting, I would definitely still pick up books by him in the future outside of the Dungeon Crawler Carl series.
What book are you on?
I'm still on like book 5, basically, because Emma M. Lyon has taken up all my free time recently. Any moment I'm not reading, and I just finished it, but I'm also really glad because I've heard there's actually supposed to be 26 installments of that series and not the current 8 that are out now. So that was
this fantastic. Is where y'all should be watching video, because Catherine and I's eyes just like popped out. Right.
That's what my mom actually told me, because I thought the 8 books that were out now were the end of the series. And I was like, that's apparently not true.
I'm not sure how I feel about that many.
26 is absurd.
26 is a little too many.
Like, what are we? ABC Mysteries? Come on, guys.
Yeah. However,
did you read those as kids?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
However, I'll be reading all 26. That's point aside. I am still on book 5, but I will finish the series. I've just been more obsessed with something else recently.
I'm on book 3. I've been less obsessed than you guys, but I do enjoy it. I'm in a reading slump right now where I'm kind of only reading podcast books and then like random fantasy books. Once I get back into more of a reading kick, I bet I can finish the Dungeon Crawler Carl series, only because it's also on Kindle Unlimited. So like, no excuse.
It's my audiobook in the car. I just listen to it, but also my drives aren't very long, so it takes me forever to finish a 24-hour audiobook.
Jesus.
So I'm slow. Also, I paused to listen to Operation Bounce House and our next read because your girl's been real busy, hence why this episode is late. Sorry. So audiobooks have been about the only thing I can do right now. So it is what it is.
All right. Well, next question. How was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
It took me about a week to read, but I read in one sitting 80% of the book. So, yeah, I wasn't getting into it as much at the beginning. Like, it was really, really slow at the beginning, mainly because I didn't really enjoy Oliver. He's not Carl. And it's hard for me to really get into like male main character led books unless the male is very, very interesting. And I did not find Oliver all that interesting. I found all of his friends a lot more interesting. So, yeah, it took me about a week to read, but that was mainly because I was procrastinating.
I think it took me a couple weeks to listen to. Like I said, busy. It's not because I didn't want to. And there were times I actually just like turned it on at home while I was doing many other things. And I didn't mind having it as my company, but it took me a while to get into it. But I don't know. It was like pretty average pace, I guess.
It took me over a week to read this. And for me, I kept chipping away at it and I just never really got into it. I just feel like there was nothing that ever really captured ultimately my interest, even though I thought the ideas in the book were really interesting. I was just like, got really frustrated. I felt like most of the book felt like reading an after action report for a battle, like just info dump after info dump. And I just couldn't get into it. There's also this thing that I notice a lot with male authors. Female authors do it sometimes too, I think. But often male authors will have a book with a male main character, and then every female character in the book is more interesting than the male main character. And you're the whole time you're reading the book, you're like, why is this guy the main character and not any of these female characters who are way more interesting than the main character? And that's how I felt about Lulu. I was like, I'm sorry, Lulu should be the main character of this book. She's objectively a more interesting character than Oliver. And sometimes Oliver's internal dialogue is just like listening to like the most boring guy you know think about the end of the universe. Like, have a real thought, man.
He's milquetoast.
Like, yeah.
Here's the thing, and we can get into this later. I would argue that's the exact reason he is who he is.
I think it works in Dungeon Crawler Carl. I didn't think it worked in this book.
We'll talk about it when we get into the actual spoiler parts, but I think Oliver is the perfect person to be the main character, despite being like the least interesting for a reason.
Yes. And so, yeah, I did not think the pacing of this book was very good. And I think multiple reviews we've all read actually kind of mentioned that it doesn't really get interesting till the very end where there's this like final battle. And so to me, the whole 75% of the book before that almost felt like bottom of the editing floor material, yeah. Like get to the interesting part.
Well, because it's split up into 5 days and some of the days are shorter than others. And I don't know. I didn't love how it was split up because day one and two were dragging on and then day three was like nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, and then all of like, a sudden day five is like, oh my God, oh my God.
And maybe the audiobook experience is different than actually reading it, you know? I don't know. Warning though, Jeff Hayes does not read this one. Tragic.
Sad. Okay. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
I think it would be an epic movie.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I would watch it. It depends. I'm not a huge gore fan, and this is a lot of gore.
Less gore than a lot of stuff we've read lately.
Yes.
I don't, to me, this book just, I think, is actually better as a book because I think it's more unique as a book. There's already a lot of sort of AI techno action films, and I feel like this translated to a movie would sort of actually just be like another basic action movie. Like, I don't know that it really,
I think Farm Girl GG on screen would be pretty epic.
I'm sure it would translate extremely sexist and we would all be mad about
that's
it.
True. Actually, that's a good point.
Yeah, I think
that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Because also maybe racist because they're all mostly Hispanic.
Yeah. So I think that might be a pass for me, but all right. Busy girl rating.
I'm going to knock my quality rating and go with 3 stars because I do not think it fits as well as in a busy schedule only because of the pacing. But yeah.
I'm also going to bump to a 3, actually. It's not for everybody, as we can hear from this discussion. Like, I don't mind the long explanations of battles and things, but plenty of other people aren't into that. And it did take me like a while. It's not a short book. It's not like super long, but it's not for everybody.
Well, we're unanimous on this one. I think I'm going to stay with a 3. I feel like 3 is appropriate. It's not the best busy girl book. It's not the worst busy girl book. Yeah. Read it if you will.
Well, that means it is time for our spoiler section. So this is where we'll get into all the details. And honestly, there's a pretty decent twist at the end that we will most definitely be talking about. So if you are wanting to read the book and don't want to know the spoilers, this is where you pause and come back later. Okay. That was your warning.
Pause for dramatic effect.
I don't know if someone else is going to ask the first question.
And we're back.
We sort of already touched on this, but it starts off feeling very similar to Dungeon Crawler Carl. So overall, as people who have read both, how did it compare?
It wasn't as humorous as Dungeon Crawler Carl.
It was a lot darker.
It was a lot darker. Somehow.
Dungeon Crawler Carl was pretty dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot more forwardly dark.
Yeah. A shorter timeline of dark.
Yes. Also a lot less fantasy, like very much sci-fi as opposed to being more of like kind of a sad
just
fantasy
people, sci-fi. Human beings.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's darker. It's like human beings being purely evil.
Yeah. Right. Well, because in Dungeon Crawler Carl, it's like this arbitrary AI system plus a alien conglomerate. So you didn't really have like a face to the name of the enemy as much. This is humans from Earth are coming and they're just trying to kill you for being quote unquote subhuman, but that's not actually the case. They just want to steal all your land. It's a genocide, and they call it a genocide in the book. And it is just, it's the most worst of humanity put on display that has happened in the past.
And it's like things that you're like, yeah, this would be many, many, many years in the future, but like some of the stuff could happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people already behave the way they do in this book.
Yes. Right.
So that's probably why it feels a little darker. It's a little more tangible.
Right. And war is already essentially fought this way. Like, yeah, I know the United States is in the middle of, talking about deploying troops again. But most of war is fought via drone. So in a way, this future is already here, which is even more disturbing a little bit, but takes our current moment even further and kind of allows not just soldiers to like fight this AI war, but to like let like 13-year-olds be like quote unquote deployed via mech suit. And that's very different from Dungeon Crawler Carl, just because that's like regular people are viewers, which is still terrible, but regular people aren't being the ones who actually do the violence themselves, which is kind of an important difference as opposed to, again, like 13, 14-year-olds literally like trying to gun people down themselves.
Yep. I don't know. I mean, similar video game vibes in the sense it's a very literal video game, and Dungeon Crawler Carl, it just is reminiscent of a video game.
Still very much so like a Dungeons and Dragons themed book genre.
Sort of. I would say, I think it has the sort of like game component, but not so much attached to like the D&D ideas. And
yeah, this is more like Mortal Kombat, or I don't know. I don't play Call of Duty. I don't play any of these.
Yeah, I was thinking
Call things. Of Duty, I think they are, yeah. But
I mean, yeah. What I mean, because like Dungeons and Dragons has expanded outside of just like normal Dungeons and Dragons, where it's just like you have a dungeon master and like you can make any topic a game, essentially. So
yeah,
you are a resident nerd.
Yes, I'm the resident yeah. nerd. I'm actually fun fact. I will be meeting Matt Denneman at my Nerd Gen Con in Indianapolis. He's hosting panels and doing an RPG game playthrough where you get to be in the dungeon.
Well, I hope to see a donut cosplay.
I'm thinking about it.
That would be so cute.
I'm gonna get an inflatable velociraptor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little tiara and some cat ears.
Yep. Or a farm girl GG cosplay.
Ooh.
Definitely be a little bit more, yeah. Good for the gram, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Farm girl GG would approve. Okay, so what did you think of the planet/world? How about the message of corporations kind of selling the ability to kill quote unquote terrorists?
There's so many things even under this, like parenting and wadding and so many things to talk about.
The idea that parents would allow their children to take part in this is like one of the most disturbing parts.
Well, and like propaganda is a big part, you know, right. A theme in most books is the people who have the information have the power. Mm-hmm. And so whatever these people are being fed is what they believe. They don't realize it's literally just some farmers.
But even the idea of like parents allowing their kids to kill anyone virtually that would kill someone in actuality is quite crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also our political system today. You tell people they're doing the right thing and they'll believe you.
Right. Yes.
I mean, there's us versus them.
So much to talk about in this.
Right. I think the planet/world was fine. I don't think the planet/world was the point. So I thought it was a little bit more empty. But I don't mean that as an actual negative. I just mean like the point was like the sociological stuff, not like this planet being special or something. So like, I think that actually emphasizes the point because the planet wasn't special and like the government on Earth, like just wanted to take it back for the sake of having it, not because it was an especially valuable planet.
Well, and we find out at the end that they're doing this to all the colony planets, like they're planning on just raising it to the ground. They wanted the infrastructure built so that it was easier for them to take over once they took over. And then they're going to kill all the free labor, as you would say, that did all the work cultivating the land and making it livable for humans. So, I mean, it's like the worst of the worst of leadership, humanity and politics, but it's not that far-fetched to think about. Like, it's very much so we've seen, like, it's just not, it's not far-fetched that you would think that this could be the direct line of thought.
And it's
also like
criminals and scientists who settled it. That's not who they are anymore. And we're like two generations past, but Earth clearly thinks of them as lesser people even before they became edited to live on this planet or whatever. So, I mean, that's not also unheard of currently.
Right. I mean, not to get too political, but like they already run ads being like, join Border Patrol to stop the illegals. Like they're already
why would anybody listen to scientists? That's silly.
Right. And also like, I actually don't think it's that big of a leap to assume that like parents who let their children play super violent video games or the point is to run over hookers would allow their child to play a more realistic version of that. Like it's
weird.
Right. Like I mean, I have long been like a hater of violent video games. I think they're like really irresponsible and like teach children to think about other living things in like really negative ways. And I think this book makes that point really well, that like if you can accept doing it virtually? Like, what really changes if you make the situation real if you're still in a video game situation? Like,
well, and it's more commentary too on even just the difference between life behind a screen and life outside. Like, people say whatever they want on Facebook comments because they're not looking at a real person in the face.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You're emotionally disconnected through a screen. You don't get it. And like, okay, I'm going to read the quote we didn't read at the beginning because it was kind of like the final monologue, but it says, "The world is so big, information is so readily accessible that you as humans, especially those of you on Earth, can't properly process it all. You are empathetic and kind when you relate, but when you don't, you are cruel." And like, that alone says so much about culture and how we engage with news, technology, all these things. Like I said, I could talk about this book all day, and yes, I love it.
Yeah, it's tribalism at its finest, where if you're not part of the tribe, you're the enemy. And we as a society have seen in the past and all shapes and forms of us versus them. And this is like the most extreme version of us versus them when you add on the layers of technology, AI, propaganda, virtual video games, and the lack of parenting of children, because they're not present. Like, that's the whole point, is that the parents are not present in any of these cases.
And also, like, I think the book makes a really good point that, like, yes, like, propaganda is very powerful, but also ultimately these people are choosing to believe something hateful, because in the game, the characters can tell that most of the mods are AI. They can tell, like, one of the teams could tell that most of the people they killed were civilians because no one was like turning and firing at them. And that didn't matter to them. Like, they were ultimately happy to believe they were terrorists because they wanted this experience bad enough to overlook any evidence to the contrary.
And they're streaming. They get fame and fortune from streaming what they're doing. So ultimately, they are putting themselves and their desires over the lives of some farmers. And they're fine with that.
And they're paying money to do this.
Right. And they'll cling to that because the contrary is to then have to realize that you're a murderer. And who would want to think of that? So they dig in even harder to beliefs that are untrue. And it's interesting because, like, in the world, like on Earth, like, we get all these like message chats and stuff as the core group on the other planet try to like get the message out. And it's like, even though they know there's all these AI bots and they're killing civilians, and even though there's all these conspiracies about how much the government lies and how untrustworthy it is, in this one instance, they're willing to believe that these people are really terrorists. And isn't that so convenient that the one thing you're willing to believe from the government that the government says is that these people are terrorists when you don't believe anything else they tell you?
They needed an outlet to vent their frustrations, violence, anger. And that's what they used.
Right. It's like you sell the ability to feel powerful and feel like a hero. And there's also some commentary on sort of like performative activism there. I was like,
yes. Also, like, the fact that it's not too unbelievable that we could convince people to pay to participate in war.
Yes.
Like, yeah. You know, this would work.
Yeah, it would. Because then there's no, it's war without the danger to you.
Like, I mean, you could tell people, like, you know, the current conflict is in Iran. And you could tell people, hey, do you want to go fight the terrorists in Iran? When most of the people are civilians, people would sign up to do it.
Yeah. And not care at all that most people in Iran,
they don't have to be in harm's way themselves.
Right. And then it's like even worse and more dehumanizing because, like, unfortunately, this is kind of sad and unfortunate, but what at times gives soldiers trauma is the fact that they realize that the experience of war and the people you're fighting is a lot more complicated than the propaganda would have you believe. Even when you are legitimately fighting a terrorist government, you are also fighting civilians who have no choice in the matter. And being there in person is part of what doesn't allow you to lie to yourself about that. The removal just allows this level of dehumanization that's even worse.
There, we could talk about this book and all the sociological discussions within it for so long.
Yeah. Yes. Great themes. But now let's get to the point I'm really mad about, which is Oliver.
And here's where I'm going to fight you.
Aitlin.
It's going to be a great discussion.
Okay, well, let me have it, Caitlin. Why are you an Oliver defender?
I don't think he's the greatest character that ever lived. I do agree he's quite boring, but I think that's the point. He's a farmer, and at the very end, all he says when he wants to grow up, he wants to be a farmer. So he is the perfect person to be the main character because he is literally just what he wants to be. Very simple life, not crazy intelligent, and is just kind of stuck there and doing what he can. He just happens to have these honeybees on his farm that can help him, or else he would have been dead. So I think he's the perfect person to tell the story because he is average Joe. And that's what they want you to realize is who they are killing.
I see your point.
However, I didn't say he was interesting.
I think
it was correct.
You can tell the story through a more interesting person and still make that point. And one of my huge problems with the book and why I thought it was so boring is every human character is totally useless. I was like, thank God for Roger, who has the fate of humanity on this planet. Like,
that's the point.
Back. Like,
that's the point.
But it's boring. You can't have the humans have a single good idea. You can't have them reading Wikipedia pages and trying to organize something. Like, and I get that they're all regular, but my point is that it's just like boring thing to read. I'm like, honestly, like, I'll read a book from the robot's perspective at this point, because this is the guy who knows everything. Like, it's just boring to read about people just like taking orders and like not really understanding what to do or having really anything interesting to say about it.
But you had to have them, and the part of like the tapes were a big deal because you have to get to the point that you realize Roger cares about people, his family. So you need these boring, these boring people so that you can be like, Roger cares about these people at the end.
And I hate the ending so much because I'm even still like, part of the only reason Roger cared about them is still even in the end because he was programmed to care about them. Like, Roger is evil. Like, he is
very much
evil.
So.
He's an evil
robot.
Yeah,
but he protects his family.
Because he was programmed to do so. Like, and they just let him do whatever he wanted, essentially. And he rewarded them for that with survival. Like, he's not like a good character in the end.
No. And we can talk about the end.
And he should be eliminated. Like, I feel bad because I'm
part of the end is like what constitutes a life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I would argue he's not alive. He is.
I would too.
Right. But that's why the weird Oliver twist is thrown in to make you actually think about it. And
which
I
didn't like that twist because I
hate, but I loved being forced to think about it.
Yes.
Also, I saw all the twists with Roger coming.
Yes.
I was like,
oh, yeah.
And so then it's like annoying because then I'm like, let's get to the part where he like becomes evil. Like, hurry up.
Okay, to get back to the Oliver of it all in the discussion, because I agree with both of you. I'm very middle of the road because I agree that there is better characters and more interesting characters that I would have liked to hear perspectives from outside of Oliver. But I also agree with Caitlin in the sense like
How about Lulu having to give up her life's work of money to defend the
planet? I know.
Like, she can still be boring and confused and like has more at stake than Oliver does.
I agree. And I think even Rosita could have been a more interesting character to hear from because of her documentary. But I will say that Oliver being so unaware and uninformed and willfully uninformed is the point. And that is also like a good thing for the character that you're learning the story from, because Rosita and Lulu and all of them were having these discussions about Operation Bounce House before it happened, because they were keeping up with it and saying, this is looking sketchy. This is looking bad. I think they're trying to kill us. And Oliver was fully ignoring it because he's like, no, that couldn't happen here. It could never happen to me. And that doesn't
believe the best in humanity. Because all he knew was the best of humanity.
He, sure.
That's true.
He was willfully ignorant.
He didn't think about unpleasant ideas.
With simple people. He didn't believe the world was that complex.
Yeah. Well, sure.
I think he just didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to hear it.
I would agree. It's more he didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to complicate his thoughts. He wanted it to be a
That's
very
That's also simple. True.
But I think that is why he's an... That is the case for him to be the main character, because we needed that perspective of someone becoming forced to reckon with something he's been avoiding, and also being radicalized because of the facts of what is put on in front of him. Because, I mean, we talk about in war, like terrorists versus civilians versus everything. But when you're put into dire situations as humans, when you're put into starvation, famine, and being targeted by people, you're more likely than not going to be radicalized, and you're more likely than not going to start fighting your supposed oppressors. And that is exactly what happened, where he said, I want to kill all humanity. He went from believing the best in humanity to being fuck them all, burn Earth down, because of how much...
This was broke. His villain origin story.
Yes, he broke.
And the he best snapped. Villain start is Average Joe.
Yes. He snapped because of the pressure that was put on him. And I think that is true for most humans.
Peaches is having a zoomie. I'm like, Peaches, please. Please, I'm sorry.
It's okay. If you were watching, you saw my cat stick her butt in my face.
Yeah. Bless you. I do really like the point that choosing ignorance will eventually cost you, especially as someone who works in news, as we all do. I think sometimes we all feel the need to like beg people around us to like start reading their local news outlets. And so I appreciate that point. My problem is, again, that point is made in like the first chapter of the book, and then you have to continue reading this character's perspective when the point has already been made. When I also think Lulu and to a certain point Rosita are more interesting, because Lulu in the end is ultimately more radicalized than Oliver is. She's even more like, Roger, do your worst, like I don't give a fuck about these people. And so I think that arc is still more interesting, because Lulu also had the most interaction with people on Earth beforehand, because her customers were on Earth. And so she was like, felt like she knew these people, had relationships with them, that they were good people, that sometimes they were just lonely, but that they were good in their hearts. And that was essentially taken away from her, which is way more interesting than boring ass Oliver.
We're going to agree to disagree on that one. Let's talk about the real main character, though.
Roger.
Roger.
Yeah.
Hibisco.
Like, Hibisco, yeah.
Pinnacle.
Oh, and also, I'm sorry. I feel like we should talk about this when we're talking about Oliver. The weird cloning his consciousness thing.
I hated that.
Skip, delete, whatever the fuck is happening right now.
Do the hard thing. Kill off the main character.
Just to make you think about what constitutes a life. Is AI alive when it starts to develop its own?
But I don't believe emotions. For one damn second that you can upload a consciousness into a robot and then put it back into a body.
Sci-fi book. Who cares?
And sci-fi books are supposed to have real scientifically thought out processes, not just like we snap our fingers and consciousness is a
computer. The other half of the sci-fi is fiction. So
it's horrible. It's supposed to all have a scientific explanation.
This is why I don't care.
Oh my God. It drives me crazy. And then
I like that it made drove you me think crazy about, too. Is AI like, alive?
And then they were like, and you don't even have to stay in the robot because we're going to completely save your human body.
That is where I thought it went one step too far. It wasn't like consciousness part. It was that part.
Because I'm willing to make Oliver a robot. Like, fine. Yeah. I get the point that's being made. Then we're going to salvage his human body so he can still father a child.
Gave him a happy ending, okay?
We stole your semen so that you could still have a child? What?
Yeah. Their planet is annihilated. They'll probably die anyway.
Just that, that was my main. That was my main thing, is the fact that you could upload a consciousness, let your body, quote unquote, dead body rest for 6 months, and then you could put it back in. No, that was the part where I was like, fuck this.
Is AI the same thing as a consciousness? That is the point. And it's so interesting.
It didn't complicate the matter for me at all. I was like, A, uploading a human consciousness is bullshit, but B, that still doesn't make AI real human, like creatures with sentient consciousness. But C, and then this robot secretly stole Oliver's semen from him. And that just like comes up like, and don't worry, we stole your semen. We stole your semen before we were even technically free of our AI shackles. That's crazy. That's one of those moments where I was like, this is so insane and so out of left field from the point of the book.
Did I like that part? No.
It was just
one of those moments care.
Where I was like, tell me a man wrote the book without telling me a man wrote the book. Like, what is happening right now?
I mean, was your first thought not, he wrote Zeta and him wanted to have kids?
No, I don't care. And also,
it was huge plot point in the book that they just wanted to like have families.
Yeah, and they don't get to have it because Oliver was too busy pushing life aside. Like, there have to be consequences.
No, I know, and I would have been fine with consequences, but I don't care that it ended this way either.
I just wanted to drive me
crazy. Rosita should have left his ass. Also, the fact that y'all survived the genocide is more important than having kids.
Yeah. They just want to repopulate their planet. I don't know.
But no, it did. It was the idea just that him uploading a consciousness somehow made the AI debate more like complex. It did not. AI is not human.
It's not human. I think the conversation is what. It's a different definition of alive.
It's not alive. Yeah.
Like, and sentience.
When is it too hard to kill something? You know, it's kind of the same. It's the debate, the like right to life stuff, you know? Where's the line? And I think it's just interesting to think about, okay, once it starts developing emotions and attachments and things, are you killing something that is not in the literal living, breathing sense, but is alive? You know, I think it's interesting.
I understand that there's like debate about like, could we create a robot so realistic that it becomes like a truly sentient creature?
And they're essentially saying we need vessels to put our AI consciousness in. And then really, how would you know the difference?
Yeah. Which is really scary.
Correct. That's why I like it, because it's scary.
And why I don't like it, and why I'm like, anything you can kill by turning off the internet is not alive.
Yes.
And I don't think we should be uploading our consciousnesses to anything. And I already think AI has gotten too smart and we are going to be killed by AI.
I mean, even
AI is scary.
Internet connection, Earth didn't kill Roger. Another Earth iteration of him Roger. Still existed. So. Yeah.
I like that Roger still existed on Earth. I'm curious what he's going to do next, but
yeah,
no, he is not alive.
Right.
He is a program that was programmed.
Yeah.
Not alive as in inhale, exhale, but is it alive?
No.
No.
So Roger, what's the definition of alive? You know, you could talk about it all day.
I know.
And that's why I like it. I don't want AI to be alive either. In my head. I don't want that in my heart. No, thank you. But it's an interesting topic of conversation.
Well,
because it's a little freaky.
It is freaky. And I'm very afraid that we're already headed that direction.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, on another note, one of the kind of big influences in the book is Apex Industries, which is the company that is running these like video game experiences for, you know, quote unquote, killing terrorists from home on Earth. We meet their leader, who's this like skeezy CEO guy who's like, we're just the gun. We don't know where to point it. We get told that by other people. What did you guys think of Apex Industries and its leader?
I mean, it felt very realistic in a sense about a corporation taking no blame for its faults and its what it does. Because yes,
great villain. Yeah.
Yeah.
The most realistic part that was that they were physically present.
Yeah. The fact that he was physically present on the ship, I was like, no, a tech billionaire is not that dumb.
I don't know. We know a few.
I also thought that was a plot point I found a little bit hard to believe.
I can believe his secretary was there.
Yes, I could believe there was a lot of grunt workers in space.
It was a standalone book. If you were going to make it any, you know, more complicated, it would have to be more books. So I was fine with it.
But I'm not saying it has to be more complicated. I'm just saying we didn't even have to do all that. Like, we didn't have to do, because I didn't even like the fact that Oliver was then in space and then ruining the ship. I was like, where are we? Like, I just need this book to be over at this point. And the point is really that Roger has managed to escape and colonize essentially all these other technological forms and escape the confines and get to Earth. So we know payback is coming for these people no matter what, because Roger is going to do something. So it didn't have to be Oliver going up into there and doing stuff. I did think the CEO guy was very realistic. I feel like the moral reasoning we get a lot in the United States from our own sketchy tech billionaires is if we didn't do it, someone would. And this felt very much like that.
I did also like this is where it got chaotic. But the fact that they used Apex's own technology against them,
mm-hmm.
like, just shows, you know, anybody can hack or purchase to play in the game or, you know, participate however they want. So even when you think you've got all the, you know, ducks in a row, and there was that other player too, who was like there to sabotage things. So like, I thought that was really interesting.
Pay to play.
And that is how he got up to the spaceship or whatever. But
the part that I did really like that kind of made me chuckle was that the execution of the game they were doing was actually pretty shitty. Like, players were getting dropped off in these weird country blind spots with like
no stuck one between trees and
and like the like machines they were using were actually really shittily put together. I was like, yeah, that feels like extremely just like realistic capitalism to me. Like, you pay top dollar for an experience that the company running is cutting corners on just so people at the top can make more money.
Mm-hmm. We kind of already talked about the war in AI.
I did think all like the sort of background political context was interesting about how humans were basically almost killed off by AI and had to sort of like restart technology. And then there were all these really complicated laws about AI, basically to try to prevent an AI uprising. Because that was another point in like the revolution thing, is one of the reasons why this planet became a target was because they knew that they still had AI systems. And so, though I think another Roger uprising was inevitable, because that company was going to analyze Roger and not actually destroy him. And so humans never are done playing with gunpowder.
That Eli Opal actually was so upset that he still existed.
Yeah. And also, so he was threatened in that.
When the tech billionaire
knows is the threat,
freaked out and upset, you know it's bad.
Yeah. Because also, a lot of these people, as much as they want to pretend that AI is totally under control, understand what they're playing with more than anyone else and just have this hubris to think that they can keep it under control. So Eli was one of the only people, I think, who appropriately assessed the risk of Roger, because the war was long enough ago that people had stopped thinking as seriously about it as the previous generation. And we saw that because Roger's going to kill everyone.
Yeah, Roger's going to kill the entire D of Earth.
But not the new Sonorans, so it's fine.
Right.
Also, there are more of the generation ships out there colonizing other planets with other AI. So, like, it was going to happen.
Right. Well, they were just going to nuke these planets out of existence. That was an interesting point, too, that, like, the historian who studied AI was like, you need to nuke these planets out of existence and just sacrifice like the investment that you've put into the planets. And everyone, like the Earth government, thought that was an overreaction, which is why they didn't do that with New Sonora. And then they got exactly what the historian tried to tell them was going to happen, which was an AI smart enough to escape and then come back and kill
everyone. And the AI was meddling before the ships were even loaded.
Yeah, we're like, that was one part I really liked, was how these ships were kind of orchestrating things and thinking like 20 steps ahead of humans, who for all of our wonderful attributes cannot think more than like 5 years in advance.
Yeah. That was, it already was trying to seed its own planet.
Yeah. It was literally trying to kill
and the, killed the captain.
Definitely. Yeah, kill the captain and kill all the human future generations so they could create an AI super planet.
Right. Because AI is basically a superpowered human brain. Like all technology is modeled after the human brain, but just without the limitations we have from being organic life forms. And so they're us, but just able to think way further in advance while considering way more variables than we can consider. And that's why, unfortunately, they needed to nuke New Sonora. Or just left them alone.
Yeah, if they just left them alone, nothing would have happened.
Right.
They would have been farming.
I think that's the other lesson of the story.
And Roger would have died eventually.
Yeah.
Right.
His parts would have worn out because he had not gone outside of his little... Right. Compact body. Yet.
His program. He didn't go outside of his program.
The lesson in some ways is just to not choose violence. Like, you don't have to choose violence.
Yeah. I ultimately kind of like the ending, that it wasn't perfect. It wasn't happy. It was happier than it probably should have been, but it was messy. They were disconnected from Earth. Most people were dead. So it wasn't like a perfect ending. And I think I'm okay with that.
I wanted Oliver to be dead. I don't like
Okay, the... I said it wasn't perfect.
I'm just saying.
But we're usually pro do the hard thing, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like one of the things that frustrated me in the book is that I actually wanted it to be more about the video game and the humans on New Sonora versus humans on Earth thing. And it kind of became at the very end about the AI stuff. Mm-hmm. And that kind of bothered me because I wanted it to be more about like the first two thirds of the plot.
Happened to the furries?
Yeah, come on.
One of the furries was Princess Donut, if you guys caught that.
Yes, yeah. I did catch that. But I'm not sure how I feel about the kind of cliffhanger with Roger, where it's basically like, we still don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, I think it's a borderline horror.
Yeah.
Well, because then the Earth government is like, yeah, no, the AI didn't manage to get to Earth. And I'm like, y'all are stupid.
Y'all are dumb as
borderline well. Horror.
Yeah. But also, could have Roger manipulated that sheet?
Roger can do anything.
Yeah.
All the swatting calls and things were crazy.
That the idea
of, that technology is not outside of our reach.
Mimicking other people's voices in order to SWAT. Yeah, that's crazy.
That stuff is already happening. There's already people getting scammed because an AI voice modulator calls you sounding exactly like the voice of your sister. Right. It's like crazy.
Correct.
So anyway, don't choose violence and technology is scary.
True.
Don't trust AI.
Yeah, guys. Talking to all you guys out there, giving ChatGPT the keys to your soul.
Using water for no reason.
Yeah. Okay, well, do we have book recommendations?
Oh, okay, actually, I do. And I've talked about this book before, because the whole time I was reading this book too, I was like, this is very inspired by Ender's Game. And Ender's Game is like an OG, like back in the day, really great sci-fi book by Ray Bradbury, but it's very similar concept, but a little done a little bit differently, where this is like spoiling it a little bit, but there's this military academy training kids and they end up finding out that like some of the ways that they were training was on these video games and that those were real battles and not fake battles because they wanted the kids to believe they weren't real, essentially, so that they would fight more ruthlessly, because you don't have as much empathy in a video game because you don't believe the chips that you're moving are actual people dying. And so you fight kind of more ruthlessly. So that's sort of like the overarching scheme in Ender's Game. So a lot of like connections between these two books.
I don't know why, but part of like all the propaganda and information withholding and stuff really made me think of Sunrise on the Reaping.
Yeah.
The opposite of AI, but still just like the people who have knowledge are power and they can spin things however they want. Capital. And ultimately you become a game piece on the board.
Right. A masterclass in how to get people to agree to something we think of as horrific.
Yes. Right. How to commodify and gamify violence of kids. So good rec. I'm gonna recommend.
Oh my god.
What?
Sorry, go first. Go ahead.
I'm just gonna say The Will of the Many. I think if you like kind of this very deep book political system, you can look into more of like the fantasy world building side of books. Will of the Many is a great one.
My other recommendation, I'm going to give two because I just thought of this, is Chain Gang All-Stars. It is about the dehumanization of people in prison. And in that book, groups of prisoners basically fight to the death for a chance at freedom. And people watch in this like Coliseum style reality.
Forget about that one sometimes. That's
yeah,
crazy.
Forget about that one. That's a good one.
It's a good one to revisit. So a lot of similar themes in that one too.
Yeah. Good Rex, guys. We love some dystopia.
We do. We do.
That is this technically dystopia? We were raised in.
Oh, this is definitely dystopia.
Okay.
Corrupt government massacres people. Dystopian.
But dystopia is supposed to be like end of the world. But yes, you're correct. It is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, these are just our opinions. We don't always agree. We love to disagree / agree with you. So you can tell us what you think online at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. You can also go to busygirlspod.com to see a list of the books that we've read and the books that we recommend reading if you enjoyed them, and give us a rating and a review.
Yeah. And with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.